Meditation teacher Tara Brach said some years ago, a friend of hers was attending a very diverse interfaith conference. And to begin the conference, they had to decide how they were going to talk about or refer to the divine, or as she said, what it is that our human hearts most deeply cherish. They have to come to some common understanding here. So the first person said, well, shall we call it God? And she said, a female Wiccan said, no way. Another said, what about goddess? And then a Baptist minister did thumbs down to that. Then someone said, how about spirit? And an atheist shook his head. And this goes on for a while. And finally, a Native American suggests, how about the great mystery? How about the great mystery? And she said, everybody agrees with that because they all sense the mystery behind any religious or spiritual idea. So as we reflect on the ascension of Jesus, we too, right, are facing the great mystery. Luke and his account in Acts of the Apostles, and then what we just heard in the end of his gospel, is attempting to describe that which is indescribable, number one, but a time when the risen Christ disappears into a cloud in order to complete his resurrection to the right hand of the Father. A great mystery. We know biblically that cloud often is a metaphor for the divine presence, right? Remember the children of Israel get through the Red Sea, and there's this cloud by day, the fire by night, and the cloud would move during the day and they'd follow it. But some days it wouldn't move. It would just stay put. And the people would stay put because they did not want to get ahead of the divine presence, which is wonderful advice for people like me and maybe like some of you who don't feel alive unless we're breathlessly rushing ahead to get the next thing done. I mean, how else would you know you're alive if you're not always moving fast in order to maintain that sense of control over our lives? But in that process, we know right often we have gotten ahead of the divine presence. Sometimes we avoid the divine presence. Let's admit that too, because when we slow down, okay, I'm going to live in the moment, I'm going to slow down, I'm going to breathe, then we start facing some of those inner voices in us that say, well, you're a failure if you're not doing nine things at once. If you're not rushing around, you're not enough, you're not good enough. So to slow down to the speed of life where God is can sometimes be the very thing that scares us most. And I guess that reveals, at least in my life, that means we're not convinced we can trust our lives to God. We can only trust Him to ourselves. Therefore, maybe for some, it was a relief, ascension. Oh, good, Scotty's beamed him up. He's gone. He's gone to heaven. And we all know what heaven is. Heaven is that place a gazillion miles away on the other side of the universe where He can't get to us, can't look us in the eyes, can't call us to drop my false self, which I like to market to the world, can't help release the true self. We are in His presence. But that's not what Luke is trying to tell us at all. As you know, you've heard me say in the New Testament, heaven, as Karl Barth puts it, is the hidden sphere of God in the world. Or as N.T. Wright puts it, heaven overlaps and interlocks with earth. Or we might say, heaven is God's dimension of reality that interpenetrates all other dimensions of space and time. It's all metaphoric, of course. Our colleague puts it this way, what we prayed this morning, He ascended far above all heavens that He might fill all things. A great mystery. In the ascension, Jesus is actually drawing nearer to us than our own breath, our own thoughts. And that's why Luke says, after Jesus leaves the disciples in the reading we just heard from Luke, it says they were filled with joy. He's gone, but they're filled with joy. So they understand, they know what it is to be accepted by God through him, and they know that experience has not ended, but continued. And now, it doesn't matter where they go. They can go to the farthest end of the world, as they would, and not leave behind Jesus Christ who loves them. This is indeed the great mystery. But let's face it, Luke is trying to tell us much more than geography about where Jesus is. He's telling us who Jesus is. You remember at the Last Supper, he said, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." That is, when we see Jesus in the Gospels heal the sick, we know God is a healing, not a destroying God, right? When we see Jesus eating with sinners and outcasts and forgiving them, we know God is a reconciling and not a God that divides groups up into good and bad and in and out. When we see Jesus go in his nonviolent way to the cross, we know our God is a nonviolent, not a destroying God. And that means, and this would require about 19 more sermons, this means we need to unlearn the violence the Old Testament writers projected onto God. And that violence has been used by Christians, unfortunately, to justify their violence. So here's another way to put it. Jesus is the character of God made visible. Jesus is the character of God made visible. Want to know who God is? Look at Jesus. And it's absolutely crucial for us to ponder, because if we have a flawed view of the character of God, we're going to have a flawed view of reality and our place in it and God's thought about us, right? So I like how theologian Greg Boyd puts it. And this is, if you want to remember one line, remember this line. Your life will never outrun your mental picture of God. Your life will never outrun your mental picture of God. Well, I would say, well, I've read all the great theology. I have picture of God as anyone could possibly have, because I've read the masters. Yeah, but down in my heart and in our soul, we have pictures we have had put in us since childhood, which still are projecting into our mind. So you might wonder, sometimes what we have is a grown-up version, an image of God as a grown-up version of Santa Claus. Really? Right? Not just the old guy with the white beard, but he's making a list. He's checking it twice, and he's separating the naughty from the nice, right? If that is the image we have of the character of God, then our life will be an endless cycle of trying to please that list keeper in the sky. We know better, but yet something in us says, I've got to please that one. And our relationship with each other, it'll be filled with our own list keeping. And you don't have, you don't have to carry around pad and paper to be keeping a list. And we'll judge who's worthy of our affection today. The old line, what have you done for me lately? And we'll know who deserves that lump of coal. Or maybe that lump of coal will come in the form of, you deserve bad housing and ineffective schools. You deserve my self-righteous contempt. The ascension tells us that God does not have the face of bad Santa or any other image we might have, but the face of Jesus Christ. In other words, Luke is trying to save us from worshiping a God that is too small. I mean, J.B. Phillips wrote a wonderful book back in the 50s, I think, Your God is Too Small. We're always settling for a God that is too small. And when I fall into that idolatry, and believing in some small, petty God, I know I can count on it. My ego has just reasserted itself and claimed that it is king on the mountain and Lord of not just my life, but of all lives. Ego loves to do that. So what do you do when that happens, assuming that has happened to you on occasion? I find it helpful to dethrone myself by meditating on the enormous mystery of the universe. I mean, we can't understand ourselves or the universe, so if we can kind of put ourselves in that place, we might develop some humility. So what I do, what helps me, you'll be thinking of what helps you when you go on your vacation this summer. When we go for a week to that island off the coast of Maine, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night when it's really dark, we'll walk around to the dark side of the island, lie down on the rocks, and see the Milky Way. And that has a marvelous effect of rebalancing my inner world. You can't think too highly of yourself in that setting. And I can admit, you know, my ego is just an emperor who has no clothes. So I wonder if this is what Albert Einstein, in one of his favorite famous quotes, he's got so many, what he meant. He said, quote, once you accept the universe, you got to follow me here, follow Albert. Once you accept the universe as matter, expanding into nothing that is something, right? Are you with me so far? Once you accept the universe as matter, expanding into nothing that is something, wearing stripes with plaid becomes easy. The ascension is an enthronement story that contradicts the enthronement, not just of me, but of anything that seeks to claim my worship. So Jesus is now Lord of heaven and earth, and therefore Caesar, and thank God politics and money and race and sex and national identity and violence are not Lord of heaven and earth, and never will be, except when we in our own minds make them so. Therefore, ascension is calling us to be hungry to know the character of Jesus. Because if we know the character of Jesus, we know the character of God. We understand ultimate reality and ourselves in a more profound and truer way. But next week is Pentecost, and the great mystery is even bigger than Father, Son, and Spirit. We'll be looking at this great mystery wanting to live in us and through us, incorporating us into the very life of triune God. So some of you may remember the beat philosopher in the 60s and 70s, Alan Watts, used to have a fabulous writer, British, lived out in San Francisco, and was a wonderful thinker, was an Episcopal priest for a short time in his life. But he says, when we begin to come to this understanding that the great mystery is not just out there, but includes us, he said, then we can look at a telescope at the vast outer reaches of space, and we can say, why, that's me out there. And you say, well, that sounds pretty weird. Jesus puts it the same way, but on the micro level. You remember Mark tells us he took a child and put him in the midst of them. And taking the child in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. And whoever receives me, Jesus said, receives not me, but the one who sent me. Amen.